news, the next speaker of the evening is Mr. Bernard Malamud of the Literature Faculty of Bennington College.
Leonard's relationship to me was informal. We were friends. And if there was anything institutional about it, it's the fact, yes, that we were colleagues at Bennington College, and we spent an enormous amount of time talking about the college. He was enormously devoted to it, and from time to time would get me to do things during the summertime for his high school students. And occasionally I would read a story, and the kids would talk about it. And Leonard did as much as he could to enrich the program in directions that I was interested in, namely literature. I have a lot to say about him, and to keep myself from saying too much, I've written down a little, and I'm going to read it. Last fall at a faculty party at the Parker's Lawn, I asked Leonard why he seemed so sad. His eyes were sad. And he said, "I'll tell you in a week." And it was simply said, but a man's life had changed inexorably. I asked no more, surprised and somewhat apprehensive that my question might elicit, perhaps even engender, more than it ought. Leonard drove me home, and then we talked about affairs of the college, as we often did, sometimes over dinner in a restaurant. In a week, I knew he had leukemia. He had, in that week, suffered the loss of the life he had been living, the kind of life that he wanted to live. At first, to make the best of the drastically unexpected, he had hoped that his illness might be diagnosed as chronic leukemia, and if it were, that he would have a chance to live on for a year or two, possibly even longer. He was already in the Albany Medical Center when I spoke to him on the phone, but the diagnosis was subacute leukemia, not presently acute, but unfortunately not chronic either. And his hope for a decent interval of time to live out his impaired life had all but vanished. Yet he was philosophical about facing death, and I said that I hoped I might be in his situation. After his admission to the hospital, Leonard had gone through a severe crisis, as though he were being forced to define the value of the life that he still possessed. It was as though if you have only a fragment of life left to live, its substance, its quality, is such that it compels the possessor to ask himself, if it's still alive, what do I do with it? Under the circumstances, the pain that he was enduring, the anguish, the thought of the inevitable end of his illness, is it best to live or best to die quickly? He had gone through severe pain, fever, he'd been in a coma, he'd been close to death. Perhaps during this time he was secretly asking himself, if there was no future but dying soon, why prolong it? Certainly he asked himself that question after the crisis abated and he was recovering. It was a period of weakness and despondency. But when he came out of that, it was clear to him that he wanted to live, indeed was determined to. He said this when Anne and I visited him in his hospital room on a Sunday afternoon in late October. The boys' drawings were on the walls, and so were photographs of the family's visit to Dubrovnik during their last sabbatical. Leonard had done his additions and equations, and he told me that even if he died now, he was ahead of the game. By a miracle, he had escaped the fate of many Jews in Poland at the hands of the Nazis, and it left him owing, as though he owed fate an early death. And during World War II, when he was twice cited for bravery beyond the call of duty, his detachment had dug a trench for shelter And by some quirk of fate, it was used when the bombardment began by another detachment, every man of whom was killed in that trench. For that he was owing too, and for the fact that he hadn't died during the crisis in the hospital. He felt as though he had lived past his time, as though he had had from life a dividend of perhaps 30 years, and had had to boot his years with Muriel and their children, David and Daniel. But though he had this premonition of early death, he now wanted to live and would fight to for as long as he could, whether it was only 5 days, he said, or 5 months. He expressed confidence in his doctor and hoped with chemotherapy for a remission. He entered into his treatment calmly, knowing the odds for and against. He was fascinated by the course of his illness and patient with the medication and blood transfusions. His doctor explained the chemistry and pathology of his ailment and the statistics of survival. And Leonard patiently explained what he had learned to his friends who came to see him. He read the newspapers following the McGovern campaign with the same avid interest he always had in politics. One of his regrets was that it looked like a losing campaign. Meanwhile, old friends came from a distance to visit. The chemotherapy was working. And when I saw him last in late October, he was sitting at a small table eating, and he told me the good news that he was going home. He was home 6 weeks. The remission lasted not 5 days, no 5 months, but for 3 weeks, from early in November to Thanksgiving Day. He remained home till Christmas Day. In the 6 weeks out of the hospital, three good, three gravely disappointing, he had once more enjoyed being in his home with his wife and children, seeing his friends, going to their homes. He sat in on some classes at the college. He read through admission folders and talked with students in his office. He read books. His affairs were in order, and he had reclaimed a sweet and grateful appreciation of life. Though he found it difficult to play the violin because of the pain in his arms, he played for his friends on Christmas Eve. But he knew the remission was gone, and there was little chance that he would have another. On Christmas Day, he was back in the hospital facing death. He died with courage. With courage, he died. I imagine that as he felt the surge of death, one of his feelings was of his own strength. That's why I'd like to read a poem by Neruda, translated by our colleague, Ben Bellet. This is called Sick Man in the Sun. What would it profit you now, as good as dead, if Monday came round again, ripe as a kiss, woven with sun, loosened its place in the sky and aimed its full force at your worsening crisis? You rose in your illness and the bitter foreknowledge at whose end the impassable tunnel, dark with final prescriptions, awaits you. Your heart's silence or some other visceral menace that hurts with its certain farewells, your eyes closed, you delivered yourself to your pain, gust after gust, like a wind. Today, disinterred from your bed, you see such unboundable light in the air and you think, yes, should you die on such a day, not only would nothing have happened, but no festival would ever have equaled the measure of this one, the heyday of your burial.